me everywhere and sees everything in me. I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere and sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated, nor is the personality of Godhead ever out of the sight of the devotee. To merge in Krishna is spiritual annihilation. A devotee takes no such risk. It is stated in the Brahma Sanghita, Preman janach churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridyeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achincha guna swarupam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee, whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Sham Sundar, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Om Agana Timirandhasya Gananjana Shavakaya Chakshur Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raganatan Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhandatamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vanshako Pitarubhyascha Kripasindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hari Hari. Yo mam pashati sarvatra sarvam chalmai pashati tasyaham na pranashyami satchame na pranashyati. The Lord here describes the intimate relationship between himself and the devotee. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that in the vision of a pure devotee, he sees everything, but he doesn't see everything. Actually, wherever he looks, he sees his worshipable Lord. He sees Krishna everywhere and in everything. And he sees everything within Krishna. His whole context for everything is Krishna consciousness. Someplace Srila Prabhupada mentions that a businessman sees money everywhere. Wherever he looks, he sees money, either an opportunity to make money, or he meets someone and sees, here's somebody I could do business with, maybe a potential customer, a potential supplier, a potential partner. He sees a person and he'll by looking at the man and seeing how he dresses, he'll know how much the man is making. Everything's seen in terms of money. Everything's seen in terms of money. Or for a lusty man, everything is seen in terms of sex. He sees a girl, he wonders whether she's married or not, thinks about what she's like and her beauty and what he might say that might get her interested, or looks at another woman and thinks, nah, you know, not to my taste. Everything's seen in the context of sex enjoyment, because he's a lusty man, that's how he sees everything. So that's, of course, material vision, but people are obsessed like that. Everything's in terms of sex. But the Krishna conscious person, in a similar but dissimilar fashion, sees everything in terms of Krishna. Here's an opportunity for serving Krishna. Here's someone who could be engaged in Krishna's service. Here's a person who could become a devotee. Here's a person who's against Krishna consciousness. He sees everything in terms of Krishna. Here's a person I could give a book to. Everything Krishna and Krishna. Or here's a person who's an advanced devotee of Krishna. I could learn from this person. I could serve this devotee. Wherever he goes, he sees in terms of Krishna. Or Prabhupada gave the example, a materialist sees a flower and thinks, I could pick this and give it to my girlfriend. And the devotee thinks, here's a nice flower, I could offer it to Krishna. Or he sees the flower and he thinks, how wonderful Krishna is that he's created such wonderful flowers in so many varieties. So wherever he looks, he sees Krishna. Out of love for Krishna. When there's love, then just like the person who loves money is always thinking of money. And the person who loves Krishna is always thinking of Krishna. And Krishna says, tasyaham na pranashyami. For him, I'm never lost. And he's never lost to me. The intimate connection is there. Andantarasta paramanujayantarasta. He sees that everything is, Krishna's within everything, and Krishna's also outside of everything. Tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya. So maybe I'll stop here and we can conduct our usual program of seeing what kind of questions you might have about anything pertaining to Krishna consciousness, or otherwise we can read some more. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
It works tonight.
It works tonight.
When we were reading about Ram yesterday, it mentioned that he killed Ravana with showers of arrows. I forget the exact words, but the traditional story that I heard growing up was that Ravana had a pot of nectar in his stomach that was kind of making him immortal, and Ram killed him using a chakra that broke that pot of nectar. And when you hear these conflicting stories in Bhagavatam and other places, I wonder how you rectify that. How do you explain that? Because sometimes people attack, you know, Bhagavatam, that this isn't the story that is generally understood.
Well, Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Pramana. We accept Srimad Bhagavatam as our prime authority. That's the first thing. We're accepting Srimad Bhagavatam. Second thing is that when we speak of Ramayana, there are many Ramayans, and not all of them are authoritative. We particularly accept Valmiki Ramayana, which is sometimes called Mula Narayana, the root Ramayana, or the, you know, sort of like the mother lode for transcendental pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. Sometimes people pick things up from other Ramayans which may not be quite as authoritative, including video Ramayans, filmy Ramayans. And for them, these have authority. You know, this is, grandmother Ramayan, you know, what they heard from their grandma becomes accepted as canonical fact. So that's the first thing, that we hear so many things, but where does it come from? The second thing is that, all right, then sometimes from two accepted authorities, we get two different versions. And the acharyas in different ways reconcile these different versions. Sometimes Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they do research in the scriptures, Nana Shastra Vicharane. They search through the scriptures and they find that there's an explanation. First this, then that. Or in some other way reconciled. Sometimes by grammatical explanation. Or sometimes, finally, if there's no other explanation, all right, in this yuga he did it this way, in that yuga he did it that way. In this yuga the pastime happened one way, in that yuga it happened a different way. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Maharaj, you know, sometimes for me I run into situations that in Krishna consciousness that hurts my heart. Mm-hmm. And one of them is how you run into some devotees, and you would think, because they're in, you know, leadership positions, they would know better. And they make differences between Srila Prabhupada's books and his disciples' books. They say, well, we only present Srila Prabhupada's books. We can only have these books on the table. We can't have Srila his disciples' books on the table. So I'm wondering, you know, so many places where, you know, Prabhupada said that, you know, my disciples are extension of me, you know. So
yeah, I wonder whether Prabhupada's disciples should give classes.
Yeah.
You know, if Prabhupada is the only authority and we only hear from Prabhupada, what am I doing sitting here? And what is anybody else doing sitting here? We should just, you know, like, all sit around Prabhupada's murti and play one of Prabhupada's tapes. And because that's what we can rely on. Anybody else may be, you know, unreliable or less potent or whatever the other objection is that might be raised. For that matter, the disciples who are objecting, why should we listen to them? We only listen to Prabhupada. You're not him. Why should we listen to you?
Why are we listening to him?
Excuse me?
Why are we listening to
but him? That's my point. If that's finally our standard, that we only listen to Prabhupada, then get lost. You're not him. So it puts us in a problem if we follow it to its logical conclusion. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it's not my understanding of what Srila Prabhupada wanted. For example, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. He wrote to the temple president in New York that every night I'm attending the lecture and I'm hearing how the disciples are speaking, and I'm enjoying it. And similarly, you should also do this. So Prabhupada didn't say, you know, I only hear from the lips of Paramahansa Vaishnavas. I'm hearing from my disciples and I'm enjoying how they're speaking. So as they're speaking, they're also writing. Not that speaking is only, speaking is good, writing is not good. Prabhupada put great emphasis on writing. He himself had us publish Back to Godhead. He said, what this Back to Godhead is for, they should write for the magazine. But we shouldn't read it, because it's not written by Prabhupada. We can publish it, but we shouldn't distribute it. But what's your thinking? Prabhupada said they should write for the magazine. That means, presumably, we should read it. And we should distribute it for other people to read. If only Prabhupada's writing is good, then this Back to Godhead should be shut down. But actually, Prabhupada gave a different perspective. He was sitting with his editors in an editorial meeting with the original Back to Godhead editors back in 1969, maybe, in Boston. And Hayagriva was there, Satsarup Maharaj was there. And the question came up, can we have more than one article by you? Can we have more articles than you? And Prabhupada just said that everybody one article. One. So then, can we have more than one article by you? And Prabhupada was sort of, one is enough. But then they, all right, you know, like Prabhupada speaks out, they had some sort of equivalent back in those days. All right. Then Prabhupada said, actually, all the articles are written by me. They should just be divided up under different names. All the articles are written by me. So, similarly, all the books are written by Prabhupada, but through his representatives. Another point is that during Prabhupada's time, he had us publish books by his disciples. Krishna the Supreme Scientist, written by Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Readings in Vedic Literature, written by Satsarup Maharaj. The Vaishnav Songbook, produced by Achyutananda Prabhu. So, I'm trying to think, those were the ones that come to mind. So he authorized that the BBT should publish. He told us, he directed us to publish these books, so that we wouldn't read them, or no one else would read them. Yes. I think. Priority goes here.
I'm not agreeing with those that hurt his heart. When you said, you know, all the articles are written by Srila Prabhupada, that's kind of the point, you know. And sometimes over the years, maybe for one reason or another, some of the disciples have gotten off into a different track. And so, you know, it's been difficult to be able to say.
Therefore, Prabhupada said the editors should be very scrutinizing. That's fine.
Yes,
There's no question. Just like in biblical literature, so the main book is the Bible, and it's the one that sells, you know, 400 million copies or whatever. It's the book everybody refers to. But then there's commentaries on the Bible. There's stories from the Bible. There's so many. There's inspirational literature about the Bible. There's so much biblical literature, scholarly studies, not just that we say we have the Bible. Similarly, Prabhupada one time, I think he was, either someone had gone to Gaudiya Math or Prabhupada himself had seen, maybe someone had gone. And Prabhupada noted that after how many years, they still had, they had a book table, all Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's books. And nothing since then. And Prabhupada considered it a discredit to them that after decades, they didn't have more, they hadn't produced anything more. It's not that you know, things like enter stasis when the founder Acharya leaves, then everything's sealed and nothing new is done. You carry on and you do more, as Prabhupada did. Prabhupada didn't say, well, my Guru Maharaj wrote so many books, so I won't write any. The same argument could be presented by Gaudiya Math against Prabhupada's books, if you want to, you know, follow the kind of logic. That we have Guru Maharaj's books, why do we need Swami Maharaj's books? But it's a further contribution to the Sampradaya. Prabhupada wrote so many books, and the books have made so many devotees, and so much is going on. So it's very much in our line to write books. Prabhupada mentioned that. He said all my disciples should write. Write for the magazine or write this way or that way. That's why it doesn't.
On the other hand, as far as I know, this is what I've heard, is that Prabhupada said his books would be the law books for the next 10,000 years.
Yeah.
So how important it is to focus on, because when you
look
at
Prabhupada's
when you look at
books
the book,
have to be, but just like in the law court, they have the law books, and then there's, you know, like, I'm trying to think, there are all these commentary books on the law.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to remember somebody on copyright. It's like, or corporate law. There's like, in corporate law, there's a couple of books that are like, practically like the law books, because they're so thorough that even the lawyers in the court will cite such and such books.
Right.
Or in India, Mullah's Hindu law, you know? And it's just, they're citing the law, but they're citing it through the commentary. So, but the commentators are referring to the law. So it's there in law, it's there in religion, it's there in science. Everybody knows, you know, that Einstein and Galileo and so on, but then there's so many books that are written about Einstein, about Galileo, about, you know, further examining their findings. They're the founders, they're the great figures, and everybody else is, you know, would like to be great, but they're not so great, or they're somewhat great. So everybody acknowledges, yes, Einstein, yes, Darwin, Planck, and Bell, and so many. They're the great ones. But then people write books to make those works explainable. People write books to further the research. So Prabhupada's the founder of Acharya. His books are the standard. His books are the law books. But it doesn't mean they're the only books.
No, it doesn't.
Or they're the final books.
Well, for example...
And it's very interesting, you know, people who take this position, they'll write reams and reams and reams of rants on the internet, saying that Prabhupada, we shouldn't hear from anyone else but Prabhupada. And they don't seem to notice anything contradictory in their position. Now, also, it should be said that therefore those who are followers of Prabhupada have a great responsibility, that they're supposed to represent the Sampradaya. So they have to present something authoritative, not that they go and speculate and they imagine and they concoct. That's not wanted either. They should present the thing as it is. Then it will be effective.
Yes. Thank you, Maharaj. I was wondering, so I've always heard that generations of a pure devotee's family and relatives, etc., will be liberated once, you know.
Okay, just before we get there, are we satisfied on this topic? Okay, let's stick to this topic until we exhaust it, and then we'll go on to the next one.
One question on this topic.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I may be mistaken, but from what I understood, as far as the GBC's position is about the having only Srila Prabhupada's books being on display in the temples, I understood this was a coming out of the guru reform movement, in which this is what I had always understood, is that because in the past there was a lot of focus on my guru, and then there was like the zonal acharyas, that temple was my guru, and then the focus was like and not so much on Srila Prabhupada, and so they wanted to put Srila Prabhupada back in the center. And it's not to diss any other spiritual masters or any other writers' books coming after Srila Prabhupada, but they just wanted to make sure that Srila Prabhupada was kept in the center of everything.
Okay, let's look at two things. First, BBT doesn't have any policy that only Prabhupada's books should be in the temples, or that we'll only sell Prabhupada's books, or that only Prabhupada's books should be distributed. The BBT publishes Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita and the Prabhupada book by Satsarup Maharaj. BBT publishes a book by Sachinandan Maharaj. BBT has published a book by Satyaraj Prabhu. BBT has published Devamrita Maharaj. So we're Hridayananda Maharaj, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. So BBT doesn't have a policy that we only publish Prabhupada's books, or that only Prabhupada's books should be in the temples or distributed. We're committed to publishing more books. There is a concern on part of the BBT trustees that the Prabhupada's books not be sort of lost in the shuffle. And you're right that people can become, or there certainly was at one point, a sort of focus on zonal gurus or successor acharyas and so on. And Prabhupada was sort of sometimes seemed to be pushed to the side. And so leaders of the society and the BBT are concerned that it not become like that, that you go someplace and they're only distributing Jayadvaita Swami's books, or they're only distributing Radheya's books, or they're only distributing, you know, this person or that person's books. And yeah, do you have any Prabhupada's books? Yeah, we got them someplace. Devotees, the leaders want to see to that. And there is a concern to greater and lesser extent, depending on people's personal experience. That is to say, some have been burned crispier than others. They see something that's not from Prabhupada directly, and they sort of see it coming back again, and they get...
Kind of a reaction, like a
knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, knee-jerk, or, you know, more than knee-jerk, they have concerns, and they... So that sense is there, backed by experience, that if we don't, if we're not careful, things can become, we can veer off and lose sight of the source of our good fortune, lose sight of Srila Prabhupada's importance. So there's, you know, on balance, that's also there.
In a society where we should engage our talent.
Is that on now? Okay.
In a society where we should engage our talent in the service of Krishna. Well, there are many devotees that have the talent to be writers.
Yeah.
And if it's a progressive society, you can't stop them from writing.
Yeah, if you're going to, you know, nobody should sing but Prabhupada. We should only listen to Prabhupada kirtan, because Prabhupada was a pure devotee, so we don't want to hear anyone else's kirtan, because they're not pure devotees, and because a cult could form around them. So we'll only listen to Prabhupada. The same idea could be there. I don't know what else, you know, and everything is, you know, just, if it can be Prabhupada, then it's good. If it's not Prabhupada, it's not good. That's another kind of concoction. You know, as somebody's concocting that we sort of don't give so much importance to Prabhupada, someone else is concocting that it's only Prabhupada.
Only Prabhupada should cook.
Well, yeah, only Prabhupada should cook. You know, if you're chanting japa, you have to have a tape of Prabhupada playing, otherwise you can't chant japa properly. So we get generations of people who are trained to think that japa means you turn on a tape and listen to Prabhupada and chant, which Prabhupada didn't teach us. Now, some people find that a beneficial practice, and I have no problem with that. But it's not like, you know, if you're not listening to Prabhupada while you're chanting, then, you know, what are you doing? That's another imaginary idea. So Prabhupada wanted us to do everything. To cook, to serve the deity, to chant, to speak, to write, to make films, to preach, to, you name it, all the things, to open temples. You know, Prabhupada opened the temples because he was a pure devotee. It doesn't mean we can open them. No, of course you can. So if everything stops with Prabhupada, then you've got a bottled up movement. We've got the end of movement. Nothing moves anymore.
I have one question. The statement that Prabhupada said that his books will be the law books for the next 10,000 years. Where I can't find this statement.
Oh. I haven't done a folio search on it, but
I heard is that somebody, established. Only one person heard that Prabhupada told him that this is the only evidence.
I don't know. But I did hear from Prabhupada that even back to Godhead, Prabhupada told the editors that they should be edited very carefully. In the future, it will be consulted like law books. Even the back to Godhead, so what to speak of his books.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be time. We will leave time for Raghav.
What you mentioned about only Prabhupada can cook, only Prabhupada can write books, only Prabhupada. And it just occurred to me, just was thinking how every morning the Mukhya, she makes the announcement, those who have served their spiritual master dressing the deities this morning.
Say that again?
Every morning, Mother Mukhya, she announces who dressed the deities, and she says, those who have served their spiritual master dressing the deities this morning.
Mm.
And so she assisted their spiritual master.
Yeah.
And so that's the consciousness that we're supposed to have,
yeah.
Is that, you know, we're doing this for our spiritual master, for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure, as an expansion of what he's, you know, started for us.
Yeah. In one sense, you know, it's like the deities are Prabhupada's responsibility. So then we have to assist Prabhupada by serving the deity, or assist the assistant of Prabhupada. That's our philosophy, to become the servant of the servant. So very nice that it's announced that way.
It seems like it's just a question of balance, in that, you know, Prabhupada's books will be the main books. 10,000 years, 20,000 years. I mean, the point is like with the Bible, you were mentioning how it, you know, it was a law book, but the fact is that the Bible got, you know, changed and altered, and till finally, you know, so much of it is watered down and unrecognizable. So I think that, you know, erring on the side of caution, sometimes there's more of an emphasis on Prabhupada's books without the idea of really discouraging everyone from writing. Prabhupada wanted everyone to write. We just don't want to lose that focus.
Yeah, both things should be there. Forward movement and honoring the importance of tradition. Both things. While I'm thinking of it, this only Prabhupada becomes divisive. It is belittling to the disciples of Prabhupada. One can say offensive. You know, that, well, Prabhupada could write Krishna conscious books, but your Guru Maharaj can't write anything useful. Prabhupada could lead kirtan and it would be potent, but your Guru Maharaj doesn't have any potency that he chants. Prabhupada gives, you know, his lectures were could make everyone, make the whole world Krishna conscious, but when your Guru Maharaj speaks, you know, we don't really want to go because we only hear from Prabhupada. It is somewhat insulting and creates bad feelings for those who are the followers of Prabhupada's disciples. You know, unless there's something really wrong with them, you know, if they're teaching Mayavad philosophy or something concocted, that's a different story. But if they're speaking what Prabhupada's speaking, then what is your problem? And it may come back to, you know, unfortunate experiences and all of that, and we can sympathize, but we can't freeze the Krishna consciousness movement. It won't work. And the result will be that your movement becomes frozen. Your movement becomes frozen. And people will go looking someplace else where they do have faith in whoever is teaching, where they think that our Guru Maharaj is speaking on Krishna's behalf, where people can be enthusiastic about worship, and they'll go someplace else. Because over here we have life, and over here we have life from previous decades, you know, from 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and nothing new is allowed to happen. That won't, your movement will freeze. It will freeze. You won't, in the name of preservation, you'll have death. As much as we might want to, you know, have a snapshot of a certain historical moment and keep that moment existing forever, if you try to impose that moment on the future, that time from the past, and make it the frozen picture of the present, it won't work. Our method is parampara. Imam vivashvate yogam proktavan aham avyayam vivashan manave prahu anurikshakave bravi evam parampara praptam. Ikshaku didn't say, well, no, I'm sorry, I only hear from Vibhishan. Okay. Yes, Raga.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, let's see. So basically, I'm wondering, I've always heard that, you know, at least 10 generations of relatives and ancestors will be liberated when a member of the family becomes a pure devotee. And I'm,
you have to hold that microphone a little closer.
Oh, so when one member becomes a pure devotee, I'm hearing that several generations of the family and ancestors are liberated. And I'm wondering, it's kind of a foolish question, but sometimes I know living relatives of my family that sometimes seem as if they wouldn't want liberation even if it were thrust upon them or offered to them. So I'm wondering what happens in that circumstance if so people are, they're offered liberation, and they then, is it explained to them, well, this will be the most blissful thing you've ever experienced, or are you knowing more or less?
Yeah, does it interfere with their free will? I don't want to be liberated. From what I understand, at least the liberation means that they're freed from their past sinful reactions. That much is guaranteed. What more they may get, that I don't know. But certainly they'll have the opportunity for devotional service. And at the very least, their sinful reactions are washed away.
It's a quote from Prabhupada.
Got something? Oh.
That if you are Kadis,
your Uttamadhi card more.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Recently.
Huh.
Kanishka
Adhikari 3, Madhyama Adhikari 7, and Uttama Adhikari 10 generations. Well, someone can do the research. I don't recall that. It may be there.
Somebody actually published.
You have to hold that microphone close. Microphones don't work.
Maharaj, sometimes people say quotes like, Prabhupada said, the next 10,000 years, logbooks. Mm. There's one that I always heard like this, that books are the basis.
Oh, that one I do know about. Books are the basis, purity is the force, and so on. Preaching is the essence.
But Prabhupada, I read that Prabhupada never said that.
It comes from a Chinese book, some Chinese book of wisdom. It was read to Srila Prabhupada, that little snippet, and Prabhupada said, That's recorded in the Vedas. So it's not something Prabhupada said, it's something that the devotees have adopted as fitting with Prabhupada's mission. But we owe the Chinese credit for
it's
that.
It's a Chinese scroll.
Yeah, whatever book it is.
Can somebody translate
it? Maharaj, I was talking to a gentleman the other day. We was going back and forth about philosophy. And so I was sort of preaching to him. And so he was saying, so I was...
Can I interrupt again?
Yeah.
Two more things. One is that Prabhupada said, so many times I hear Prabhupada have said, and I have not said. And another time, who was it? I think Lakshmi Moni or another devotee, she was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was giving her instruction, and she said, well, but I was told that Prabhupada said, I am Prabhupada, and I am saying, I am Prabhupada, and I am saying.
So, Maharaj, I was talking to this gentleman about reincarnation and transmigration of the soul and all that. So this one gentleman, he was saying that what's wrong with being a dog? He said, if I take birth as a dog in another life, I know some dogs are very good to their masters and they treat them so nicely. So what's wrong with being a dog?
We hear that quite a bit. One time Prabhupada answered that, somebody said the same thing, if I become a dog, then I'll have the consciousness of a dog, so I'll be happy as a dog. And Prabhupada said, that is all right, but we do not think that kind of life is very nice. We do not, you can be a dog, but we do not think that kind of life is very nice. It's an indication of their misfortune or the workings of Maya that actually in every situation the living entity is thinking, not so bad. In the dog life, the dog is thinking, this is the life. If this, the mosquito is thinking, this is the life. Every living being is somehow thinking that my enjoyment is here. The hog is eating stool and thinking, this is great. If the human being had to eat stool, he'd think it's horrible. But the pig is thinking it's very nice. So if you'd like to have that consciousness so that you'll think that eating excrement is very nice, then you can have that body. Nature will give it to you. But we don't think that's very nice. And it's a reflection of their values. Kamo papoga paramai tavaditi nishchita. Their idea, what's the goal of life? To gratify my senses. Kamo papoga parama. This is the highest thing there is, sense gratification. They don't have a higher purpose. They don't have a higher understanding. They have the human life, and they're using it for what the dog can get. The dog can get sex, the dog can eat, the dog can sleep. And they're thinking, well, if I become a dog, well, I'll get to eat, I'll get to sleep, I can have more sex than I have now. So what's wrong with being a dog? That's how they're thinking, because sense gratification is the goal of life, and if I become a dog, still I'll have sense gratification. Maybe I'll even have more sense gratification.
When you get neutered as a dog.
You'll
get neutered. Neutered
as a dog, yeah. They don't think that the dog, they think if I become a dog, what's wrong? It's nice. They don't understand the miseries that the dog has to go through. It's not that, you know, we speak of a dog's life like it's a great thing. But the dog has to suffer also. It's not that the dog has got a wonderful life where everything is just splendid. If he wants to have sex, he has to fight for it. You know, this vicious... Sometimes they die, or they, you know, they just get all chewed up. Yeah, the dogs get fleas, and if he doesn't have a master, then he becomes a street dog. Get the bad master who treats him like garbage, or as you say, he's a pet dog. He gets neutered.
Well, you know,
is that okay? You want to be a dog in your next life? You don't mind being neutered, do you? You know, either you're a street dog, then you can play, or you can be a pet dog and you can be neutered. And when you get old, they'll put you to sleep.
And all those dogs, they get captured by the truck.
By the truck.
And now they throw the dogs inside and I saw a movie, shred them.
They shred the dogs. Or where, you could become a dog in your next life in India. You're thinking you're going to be a nice little American poodle, you know, with somebody clipping your nails and putting little bows and little ribbons in your ears. But you could become a dog in India. In India, a dog is a dog.
Become a dog in China and get eaten.
Yeah, just become a dog in China and get eaten. But in any case, you're thinking that there's some happy place within this material world. But... the statement of Bhagavad Gita is Dukkhalyam Ashashvatam. From if you become Brahma, you'll not be happy.
Thank you for that, Maharaj. And I will, some of these things that you said, I'll tell them. Mm-hmm. And one thing, you know, the guy, I don't really think he believed what he said, because he was about 450 pounds.
What's that?
He was about 450 mm-hmm. pounds, you know, and so it was. He's a cab driver, so.
Yeah. It's also perhaps an indication how miserable your present life is, that you're thinking, if I became a dog, maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
So relative.
Yeah. And we may think that you're already a dog, because you have no higher purpose. So our purpose is education, that there's a higher purpose in life, so that you'll get a body suitable for spiritual activities, not just for eating, sleeping, and having sex and fighting. Yeah?
Maharaj, I was a long time ago I read this story by, I think, Obiel J. Kapoor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to confirm it, I think, because we accepted him. I think BTG wrote a memorial.
Prabhupada had us publish his articles also.
Nice, yes. So I was confirming this story. I read one story where Krishna and Balaram went and knocked on this family's. Krishna and Balaram went and knocked on this family's door,
uh-huh.
And the little son, a grown son came out, and he shooed them away because he was taking care of his elder mother and father. He was bathing his elder mother and father. So this is authorized, huh?
Is
an authorized story.
And then what's the rest of it?
I think the basic import was that he was shooing away Krishna Balaram, and that they were very happy with his level of realization that he understood the duty of the son
Yeah, there's several such stories in Indian culture, and there are authorized stories appreciating the attitude of the son, especially serving the parents. That's there. Deva Dvija Guru Pragya Pujanam. And the Bhagavad Gita said that this is austerity in the mode of goodness, to worship superior persons, including the Lord, the Brahmins, the superiors like the mother and father. So this is there. But then, of course, it's twisted to mean that forget about devotional service, just serve your family, and that's all you have to do in your life. Mm-hmm. But Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Pratyajya. Mm-hmm. Amekam Sharanam. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Sachinandan.
You said a few minutes ago that Prabhupada even had us publish his books.
His books?
Yeah, did you mean... I was just trying to understand the context of that, or...
His articles.
His articles.
OBL Kapoor was Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, and at one point he was submitting articles for Back to Godhead, and Prabhupada instructed that we should publish them.
And who was that person's name again?
OBL Kapoor. Godbrother. I think his Dishe name was Kunja Bihari, or... No, I don't know. That's somebody else. Kunja something. Anyway, OBL Kapoor, that's the name he's known by. And Prabhupada said that we should publish his art. In fact, he was asked how we could improve Back to Godhead. He said, therefore, I'm recommending the articles of Dr. Kapoor. Yes. Mm-hmm. There was similarly an article at one point written by Chaitanya Prabhu, consisting largely of teachings from Srila B.R. Sridhar Maharaj. And we asked Prabhupada about that, and Prabhupada said, yes, you could publish. Srila B.R. Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother. Another question? Yes.
Yes. No, with the advent of the internet, it's common now that someone will give class and they will read from Prabhupada's books, but also bring so many things in from Wikipedia and from this place and from that place that often we cannot verify.
Things from Wikipedia?
Yes.
Things
or some,
like...
some pastime or some...
Oh, I see.
No, that often cannot be verified.
Well,
if it's, you know,
our process is to try to say something which is upheld by authority, that we've read in Bhagavad Gita. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something which is upheld by authority. So we can ask anyone, or we will have confidence in those who we can see are speaking from authority. They'll say, you know, therefore our method, you know, as stated in Prabhupada, you look at Prabhupada's purports, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Rupa Goswami says, you know, that's the method of speaking, to say something, and Prabhupada said immediately cite authority to, or at least be able to cite authority to back up what we say. Just as in the law court, you can't just say what you think, you have to cite case law and decisions by the appropriate court and so on. Then your argument will be accepted or taken seriously. So that's how we speak. And again, you know, like someone has a story from Ramayana, but which Ramayana is it? Is it from Valmiki Ramayana? Is it from some popular, you know, Ramayana story, Ramayana retelling? Is it from Ramayana that you saw on video? You know, which Ramayana is it? And is it reliable?
It's another reason why the devotees, followers of Prabhupada, should write books.
Yeah, that's a good point. That they should show the example. This is how you do it. They should give class and say, you know, authoritatively, so that the next generation learns this is how you give class. You quote Prabhupada, you quote Shastra, you quote Bhagavad Gita, you, You speak in an authorized way. That's how we have to do it. Similarly, books. They should write books in an authoritative way, representing the Gaudiya Siddhanta and quoting authority, and then the next generation will think, this is how you write books. You say something which is upheld by authority. So not that, again, not that Prabhupada's the last person to who should do that, or the only person meant to do that, but his followers should carry on the tradition. They should carry on the tradition. And then that serves as an example. The next generation thinks, okay, we have to do that also. Not that after the Goswamis left, that then their followers thought, well, this is it. The Goswamis wrote so many books, but now we can't write any books. They also wrote so many books. Even though Rupa Goswami, we're all known as Rupanugas, but we're not known as Rupanugas for just putting his books on a pedestal or on an altar and then not writing anymore. Prabhupada was a Rupanuga, but he didn't think, Rupa Goswami wrote books, why should I write books? But Rupanuga means following in the line of Srila Rupa Goswami. He wrote so many books, all right, let me also write something.
The name of Obiyo Kapoor is Sat Prasanga Ananda.
No, during maybe he took sannyas and took that name, but
yeah.
During Prabhupada's time he had another name.
Yeah, Professor Sannyas Adhikeshwar Prabhu was generally, you see, Adhikeshwar Prabhu was generally referred to as Obiyo Kapoor.
Yeah, Adhikeshwar.
But says, anyway, maybe there was a second name he had. Sat Prasanga Ananda.
Yeah, I think that they may have been accepted later.
Yeah.
But Adi Keshav. Yes.
I was speaking with this...
With the microphone?
Yeah, I was speaking with... I was speaking with this one guy. He's a pastor of his church. Mm-hmm. And so he was telling me, he said, well, we was going back and forth on the philosophy, but he was I could tell he was a good listener. Mm-hmm. So, but we was talking about the Bhagavad Gita. So he says there's so many Bhagavad Gitas, you know.
True.
You know, so I said, well, it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. So could you speak on that a little bit about some?
Yeah, for the outsiders, there are so many Bhagavad Gitas. So we have to present that this is Bhagavad Gita presenting what Krishna said. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Paritya, surrender to me. This Bhagavad Gita says, surrender to Krishna, not to some unborn, unmanifest something else. Most of the Bhagavad Gitas are presenting some impersonal conclusion. And this is presenting personal. God is a person. We have to surrender there. Krishna is speaking. He's a person. He says, surrender. In so many ways. Coming in the parampara line, not just some person who thinks, well, let me write a book about Bhagavad Gita. He's coming in the parampara system, and he's saying the same thing, and it's upheld by so many authoritative quotations from different scriptures, and accepted by great scholars also. So, different points can be made. There's something else that I was thinking about. Just, you reminded me of something. I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh yeah, Prabhupada was in some church. They were saying Prabhupada. They were reporting to Prabhupada that the priest was saying that Jesus is the only way. We have to go to Jesus. You don't need a spiritual master. You just need Jesus. Prabhupada said, "Then what's the use of you?" You know, we don't need a guru. You just need Jesus. Then what's your role?
Well, it was amazing catching things like this.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi,
I'm wondering about the term "boil the milk."
Boiling the milk.
Yeah, and Just how to understand that, and does it mean that Prabhupada understood maybe that even a devotee can be initiated, but they might not necessarily be very strict?
Yeah. At a certain point, Prabhupada gave this instruction. He saw that there was a lot of expansion, but the quality was not necessarily being kept or enhanced. So you open a lot of temples, and then the temples have a lot of devotees, but the devotees aren't properly trained, they aren't properly following the regulative principles, they don't know the philosophy, they don't know how to behave. Then that kind of expansion is not very good. And Prabhupada gave the example of Alexander the Great, who made a big, big empire, but as soon as he died, the empire collapsed because it was all resting on him and nothing else was really solid. You know, it was just expansion, but it wasn't expansion that could be sustained. So Prabhupada said, don't make me like Alexander the Great. So the training should be there. We make devotees, and then the next thing is to train them. How to understand the philosophy, how to follow the regulative principles, how to behave, so that you get good quality of people, and they actually advance. And any institution, you open the university, it opens up branches and branches, but then the teaching quality is not very good, the students are not very well instructed, then the university becomes rubbish. If the university opens a branch, it should have high quality teachers, it should have solid instruction, good students. So Prabhupada at that point saw that there was a lot of expansion, but not enough attention to the quality. So therefore he mentioned that, boiling the milk. Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj also used to describe his mission at one point as preaching to the preachers. Preaching to the preachers. For the same purpose, that the preachers themselves need to be instructed, need to be uplifted, need to be guided, need to learn. So there's both things are important. We want expansion. It's not that we just want to be about, we just keep the same amount of milk and boil it and boil it and boil it until it becomes rubbery. And we don't are really interested in newcomers. We want to expand, but we want to see that there's quality within the institution, that the devotees are making proper advancement. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. It's off.
The Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's that passage of Ramachandra Puri, and there's a verse that says that one should not eulogize, neither eulogize nor criticize.
Mm.
And Prabhupada comments on the purport that Ramachandra, if one is to do one of these two, he should eulogize. But the injunction is, and he used the word injunction, it's like a law, that you should not criticize, but Ramachandra Puri did exactly the opposite.
Mm.
You know? Now, with the advent of the internet, it became easy to criticize the whole world very openly, without thinking, without reservation. You know? And our own members are a victim of this.
Oh, yes.
I've seen. What can we do to help?
Well, it's an interesting question. We ourselves can stay off the internet and encourage others to stay off or to limit our participation in such things. Or you can provide good quality content, spiritual content that's not infested with Vaishnava aparads and criticism. When I told that story about the telex machine in Los Angeles, in the old days, we were doing business with Dai Nippon Printing in Japan. And communication was expensive by phone back in those days. There was only one phone company, and international calls were very expensive and subject to misunderstanding, also giving verbal instructions to Japan. And letters took a long time, 2 weeks maybe, to go from one place to the other. So we installed a telex machine in the BBT office. The telex machine involved you'd type, and what you typed would punch a paper tape, and at the end you would run, you'd dial the phone and run the paper tape through the machine, and the signal would come to the other end, and their telex machine would print out what you'd type. And it would print it out, it would have a little ball with all the letters on it, a little cylinder with all the letters on it, and it would go, what we would, even then was painfully slow, you know, printing out one character after another while you paid for the telephone time. But it was much less expensive and much more reliable and certainly instantaneous, or close to it. So it was a useful tool. So someone suggested to Srila Prabhupada, wouldn't it be a good idea if all the centers had these machines? And Prabhupada said, why? Prabhupada said, then, the devotee said, then we could all communicate with one another. They will simply use it for gossip. They will simply use it for gossip, prajalpa. That was, you know, that machine. Now, thanks to modern technology, we have a Prajalpawala's dream. We have Prajalpa heaven, where Prajalpa Loka. So, in that environment, one has to be careful. And it's the nature of that environment. People say things about one another that they would never say face to, or they say things to one another that they would never say face to face. Somehow or other, it's conducive to Vaishnava aparads. Not even Vaishnava aparads, conducive to offenses from one person to another. The karmis have the same problem. That people have what they call flame wars and so on. They just argue and insult one another and waste time. There was, in the early days of the internet, it was essentially used only by the Defense Department and certain universities. And the content was different. Now it's become the lowest common denominator. So, one should be careful not to waste time and not to commit. What's that? Atyahara priyasischa prajalpa niyamagra.
I drove one Indian sannyasi once. He was a simple man and he didn't have a whole lot of knowledge of the internet. So he said something. I told him, oh, this is not true. No, but I heard it's on the internet. It must be true.
He said that.
Yeah, he said, no, Maharaj, it doesn't work like that.
That's the other thing. In the schools and colleges, not even the colleges, high schools and grade schools, the students these days are trained how to be critical when they use the internet, how to discriminate between a site that has authority and a site that's just... where people just speak off the top of their heads, right?
Yeah.
They have regular courses. Because you can't do your homework these days without using the internet, and the internet is like ubiquitous.
We're not even allowed to
say Wikipedia. In fact, I saw some guidelines for giving presentations at the conference of a learned society. This was a society, a professional society of people with graduate, postgraduate degrees in a particular specialty, and one of the members was giving sort of guidelines about how to give your talk, how to stay within your time limits, and how to present things. And one of the things she said is, and you would think that people would know not to cite Wikipedia, and you would be wrong. You know, even people who are supposed to know better cite Wikipedia as if it were gospel truth. And it's Wikipedia is by its own declaration, the encyclopedia that anyone can edit. And therefore, as Radheya was saying, that in his school, this is like high school or grade school?
High school.
They were instructing that when you write, you do your homework, you can't cite Wikipedia, because it's not reliable. It may sometimes be a good source of information, sometimes not, but you know, you have to sort of double check Wikipedia, because anyone can put anything there. So school children are trained that when you look at a site, you know, who's the sponsor for the site? Is it an anonymous site? Is it sponsored by a reputable, you know, is it a university site? Is it the site of a reputable news organization or scientific organization? Or is it just, you know, Joe Gallagher's blog? And he's, you know, got something to say about everything. What is it? So they're trained how to discriminate between a reliable source of information, a site that's carefully edited and accepted by authorities, or endorsed by authorities, sponsored by authorities, and a site where just somebody's opening up his mouth. Because the internet is such that anybody can get up there and say anything, and people who don't know better just think, well, I saw it on the internet. So even among the, you know, forget Krishna consciousness, even in the material world, people are trained. You know, you don't take every site as being equal. Who's talking here? There's one internet site, a Vaishnava news service. I was in correspondence with the editor, and he told me himself, he said, we don't do fact-checking. He said, we only have a staff of one person, and I can't check to see whether what's written is accurate. So I just have to depend on the good faith of the people who submit the article. And so if someone submits an article saying, you know, Radha murdered her husband last Tuesday, then he'll publish it. And his explanation of editorial integrity is that his site does have integrity because it allows everyone to respond. So Radha can get back there and say, no, I didn't murder my husband, he's still alive. And in that way, the site is fair and balanced. But the responsibility is now on you to monitor his site and to answer. And then when somebody writes back and says, well, Radha may say she didn't murder him, but I saw her do it, you know, now she has to write back again and say something. You know, because the editor takes no responsibility. He'll publish the gossip. He'll publish the offensive writings. But he won't take responsibility for it. The only responsibility he'll take is the responsibility to publish your response. So children, school children, are taught to discriminate between a site that has, you know, one editor with that kind of editorial policy and a site that's run by a responsible news organization, where they take the trouble to check. The New Yorker magazine, venerable publication, is famous for its fact-checking. If somebody writes a work of fiction and says that the, you know, the novel, the little story is set somewhere in Louisiana in May, and it says that the blue jays were chirping, they have somebody check whether there are blue jays in that season in Louisiana.
It's the New Yorker newspaper.
Magazine.
Magazine.
You know, they have a team of fact checkers that will check to see if there are blue jays in Louisiana in that season. They're so careful about their fact checking.
Yes.
Well, that's what real journalism is. They check their facts beforehand. And then when they make a mistake, they publish it, and you know, you see the retraction that an earlier version of this article said such and such, and it's been fixed because it wasn't right. Or they publish an apology saying, we published this, but it was, we regret the error. And then you don't see the erroneous material on their site anymore. So, you know, there's a difference between that kind of news organization or and then, you know, rubbish sites, and school children are trained to know the difference. So we have generations of devotees who didn't go to school, you know, for whom there was no internet when they were going to school. Maybe they should learn something from their kids about how to discriminate between a reliable internet site and one that can't be relied on. Because their kids are all educated on this. Apart from that, if you're a Vaishnava, you can use your judgment. You can, you know what a Vaishnava aparat is, and when you see, like, there's one site they want to publish. They asked me, the editor asked me, generally, you know, what you consider a good site, could we publish your articles? But because they'd published articles that were bad-mouthing Vaishnavas, they can't publish my article. I said, you know, I said, thank you for asking, and no, you can't. Because I don't want to be published on sites that publish defamation of Vaishnavas.
But the Vaishnava crowd is a problem, but also a big problem is publishing something that is just not true.
Yeah, Vaishnava aparads, misinformation.
Yeah, misinformation.
Yeah, people just publish anything and everything. So one has to be more discriminating. And it's not a bad idea to spend less time on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Prabhupada's books are there, and the internet has a way of sucking your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to check your Facebook page, you have to check the New York Times, you have to check this, you have to check that, you have to check your email, you have to check your email. And soon your whole day is gone, and you haven't read even a page of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So it's a known problem, even in material circles. Our time has...
Can I say one little quick
thing? One little quick thing?
Right,
sure.
Yeah, cause it's, so we've always heard that opposites attract, and I'm just wondering, like, sometimes people are a lot alike, and it's because of it, it seems that it's harder for them to get
along. You're far away from the microphone again.
I'm sorry. I'm saying sometimes it seems people are very much alike, and because of it, it seems much harder for them to get along.
Hmm.
Did you have any comments or from, you know, Sastric comments about that?
No.
Maybe I should broaden it a bit. But
in general, the Shastric direction is that one should associate with like-minded devotees. Like-minded devotees. First of all, devotees, we don't associate, are not recommended to associate with the materialists because we think differently and we don't want their mentality. Then one is recommended to associate with like-minded devotees. Everybody has a quick question.
No, I wanted to mention, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada, and one, it was just on the way to Gainesville today, it was, and he was talking about, well, the devotees were like, by chance, you know, this can happen and that can happen, and they were trying to pose all these different arguments, like the scientists and different, and then Prabhupada kept saying, like, no, nothing by chance, not by chance, only rascals, like, and he kept saying, because they kept, you know, posing different arguments like that. He kept saying, no, nothing happens by chance. It's all Krishna's arrangements, everything. It was just really nice, you know, like just to, even to hear that, it was like,
thank you
the way
much.
That he explains it is so sweet, you know.
Nice. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.